with this thing. Go to the light.
Okay, open up the House Committee on Education for April 8th, 2015. I just want to announce that we're going to have no work session on House Bill 3069. It will be rescheduled because we just got the dash ones and they are on OLIS. Okay, so with that, I will open up a public hearing on House Bill 3384. Richard?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3384 creates an income tax credit for unreimbursed expenses to teachers and adjunct instructors. It applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2015, and has subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue.
Okay, Representative Evans. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Representative Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Paul Evans, House District 20, Monmouth Independence, West Salem, South Salem. Hopefully, this is a lot smaller, less controversial bill than last time I brought something forward. Currently, there's a $250 tax deduction, as I understand it, for classroom materials. This bill does two things. One, it makes it from a class or from a tax deduction to a tax credit. The reason for that is, after talking with a number of folks that utilize this, the existing structure of a tax deduction generally equates to about $25 of value for the folks that are using it up in materials. So it switches it to a tax credit. And then it also extends it beyond just K-12 to adjunct instructors. As we know, depending on who you talk to, 60 to 70% of collegiate classes these days are being taught by adjunct instructors. One of the blessings and the curses of being an adjunct instructor is you're teaching classes at all hours where often supplies are not made available just because of the nature of where you're teaching and when. And this basically says that for the materials piece, that there is a public good in making sure that students get the best materials possible. And if the departments don't necessarily have the resources, it may helpfully help backfill some of the expenses that I know adjuncts from my own experience and knowing a number of them that work in our department that they put into it. It's very simple, very basic, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to it. Try to answer any questions if you have some.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Okay. Easier than last time.
Wow. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Representative Evans was the only one signed up for this bill. Is anyone else would like to speak on House Bill 3384? Okay, see none. I close the public hearing on House Bill 3384. Did we have somebody else?
No.
And open up a public hearing on 3339. Okay, Richard?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3339 transfers the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, the TSPC, to the Oregon Department of Education. It transfers duties, functions, and powers of the commission to the State Board of Education and the Department of Education, except disciplinary procedures. It changes the name of the TSPC to the Teacher Standards and Practices Division, declares an emergency effective on passage. The committee has been asked to consider the Dash 1 amendments, which just went up on all this a couple hours ago. They do many of the things mentioned in the introduced bill, but maintain an independent TSPC board for disciplinary procedures and requires the state board to undertake licensing rulemaking with input from the TSPC division and the TSPC board, and certain provisions become effective as late as January 1st, 2016.
Okay, thank you.
We should stand at ease because we're waiting on him.
Okay. You see him way down?
He's coming.
Okay. We're going to stand at ease for a few minutes.
Oh.
No, we're not. We're going to unease now that Representative Johnson's here. is that a problem? Unease?
It works for me.
Works for you. Okay, thank you. Representative Johnson, we went through what the bill is. And
you answered all the questions.
No, we're just going to stand at ease to wait for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, Mark Johnson, representative from House District 52. And I've been down in revenue for all kinds of activities you can imagine, so we're here now. Happy to be here, and thank you for hearing this bill today. You know, as somebody who's involved in education like all of you, we're constantly on the lookout for ways we can, I think, do things more efficiently and get better outcomes for kids. And this bill that you have before you today, House Bill 3339, and referencing the Dash 1 amendments, is intended in that spirit. because it's apparent to me that there are some things we can do differently, we can do more efficiently, and this bill is targeted towards trying to realign some of the agency responsibilities that have some really critical roles regarding teacher licensure, teacher accreditation, the programs that supply our able-bodied and well-equipped teachers so that they can do the best possible job in the classroom. So House Bill 3339 is introduced to create vertical alignment of education policy and implementation in Oregon. Currently, the State Board of Ed and the Department of Education exist in one silo, while the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission exists in another, with their charges clearly defined. Oregon can improve the educator profession through greater policy and administrative coordination in the area of educator licensing, certification, and preparation program approval. House Bill 3339 changes the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission from being a completely autonomous agency as they currently exist to being a semi-independent agency in order to preserve the best aspects of the board, their board input, and educators assisting in the decision-making process while creating greater efficiencies and benefiting the profession, the teaching profession as a whole. I don't know if you guys have this in front of you. Hopefully you do. I'm going to walk you through the little one-pager, one-and-a-half-pager that I have. Just to kind of outline what this bill would do. So, again, we're referencing the Dash 1 amendments to the bill.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Springer had a question.
I think the question was just getting answered. Are we talking about the bill or the Dash 1 amendments?
The Dash 1 amendments to the bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good question, Representative. So, what the bill does, it establishes a Teacher Standards and Practices Division within the Oregon Department of Education. All oversight, rulemaking, and policymaking and administrative responsibilities currently carried out by the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission will be transferred to the TSPC division. Apparently, we currently have an agency. Now we would have a division within a separate agency. There will remain a Teacher Standards and Practices Board to handle disciplinary procedures independently from the TSP decision and from ODE. The TSPC board composition remains the same. 17 members with an educator majority, and the disciplinary process remains the same. All discipline assessment and proceedings carried out by the board. The governor will continue to be responsible for appointing the board. The division head, who now reports, will now report to the deputy superintendent and will act as a liaison between the division and the board and will run the division. The division head will be hired by and report to the deputy superintendent of education, and this job, the job description for the division head will be also revised at the discretion of the deputy superintendent. Licensing rulemaking will be completed by the State Board of Education after consideration of thorough recommendations as offered by both the TSPC division and the TSPC board. And at the bottom, you have a little flowchart there with some arrows and so forth talking about the responsibilities and how some of these will be realigned to show that no longer will you simply have a TSPC division that is accountable as they are right now, only really to the governor's office. The governor appoints, the governor hires a TSPC head, and they're really only directly accountable to them, minus legislative action, of course. So this puts them in a parallel relationship with the Department of Ed, and both the division and the Department of Ed then will provide instruction and input to the State Board of Ed as we talk about rule writing and rulemaking going forth regarding educator criterion for their licensure. So now I'd like to turn it over to my able-bodied assistant, Cassie Haight, who's done a ton of research about the history and background of TSPC, just so we can have a holistic view of the agency as they have existed, what they were created to be, and what the current status is.
So, for the record, Cassandra Haight, Chief of Staff for Representative Mark Johnson. So, nationally, there's about 19 states that currently regulate the educator profession through an independent board. But there's a lot of diversity in both board makeup and the scope of their autonomy. So just for an example, in 19 states, at least one member of the board is actually tied to the State Board of Education and or the Department of Education. So there's a clear link on most boards. And then six of those are autonomous only regarding discipline and ethics, and they're completely advisory. So that would be the direction that Oregon would be moving in 3339 and the Dash 1 amendments. Just a brief background on Oregon's TSPC board, and I actually found this just on the Blue Book website. So their authority first established in 1965, thank you, with just advisory responsibility. They are one of the oldest professional one of the oldest educator boards in the country. And then that changed in 1973 when they were given authority for granting and revoking educator certificates and licenses. And then with regard to the commissioners, so between 1965 and 1979, appointed by the state board, which changed to the governor in 1979 just to align with other professional standards boards that their proceedings. Standard setting responsibility. So currently they set standards on all licensing, certification, ethical expectations, professional expectation, and then they accreditate and set the standards for educator preparation programs. So they have a very wide scope currently in their autonomy. And then their administrative responsibility is issuance, discipline, and everything that would follow from setting those standards and carrying them out, implementing them, and overseeing that institutions are meeting the standards necessary. And then the chart I included is just kind of an overview on some different states and the spectrum that can exist between all the way from advisory to completely autonomous, and that there are just a lot of models to look at when you're talking about educator standards board, and you just have to find the right one that fits for the state. I would point out characteristics at the bottom that since Oregon is one of the oldest, it is one of the ones that has been the least modified, and it was last modified in 1979. So you'll see in comparison to the other states have done a lot to rework and to change their educator boards to match you know, the multiple other facets of education policy that are consistently changing. So that's the background.
Thank you. And I do think it's interesting for me, and hopefully it is for you too, just to take a little snapshot and look across the country at a handful of other states just to see the variety in the ways that other states approach this issue as well. Because sometimes, obviously, within our state here, we think that how we do is how the rest of the world sometimes does things. So it's good to share best practices. I'll move on down to the bottom of the page on page two then and begin to talk about some of the impacts and how we've laid this out is to try to say, here's a potential problem that we currently identify that exists, and here's a solution that I think that the legislation could bring to pass. So one of the problems is the independent scope of TSPC currently is broad, but the resources are limited. Relying only on fees, as I'm sure you're probably aware, can cause fluctuations in available resources for the commission in order to be able to achieve their goals. Constant revenue changes can create unpredictable situations for the commission and therefore can be hard to predict the potential impacts. One of the solutions would be, or one of the benefits of this bill would be that being a division within ODE can provide a stable administrative structure that can more easily absorb and adapt to some of the policy changes or the process changes as we move forward with education reforms. Providing technological support, helping to modernize the framework for license procession will speed up the process and provide better service to educators as they try to work through their licensure needs. Another problem is the independent scope is broad. Oh, pardon me.
Next page.
Typo there. Another problem is responsibilities borne by TSPC will be increased and not decreased in coming forward. Even with adopting the proposed fee increase this year, there's no guarantee that TSPC can accommodate and the more important responsibilities that they soon will be shouldering. And these new responsibilities may likely entail the need for more staff and attention than currently exists or could be budgeted for in the future of TSPC. The Oregon Department of Education can better absorb policy changes and address increased responsibilities shown in the bill language below. I would just outline a couple of, for instances, or a couple of items coming up regarding policies that we're working on this session that I know will require a greater involvement of TSPC to be involved. And we list those at the bottom here. Senate Bill 78. Is in the process. It's been passed out of Senate Ed, I believe. It's in Ways and Means, but it's going to establish the Teacher Education Program Accreditation Account. And it is intended to enable TSPC to award grants to teacher education programs for CAPE accreditation, which is Council for the Accreditation of Educator Preparation. So we're going to have encourage all of our teaching and teacher prep colleges and programs to adapt a national certified standard to raise the bar for everyone across the board. This is going to require TSPC to provide for administrative capacity to monitor the progress of institutions and administer these grants properly. So it's an increased role that they're going to have on their plate quite soon. House Bill 3069 is before this committee. It will also, it calls for raising standards for teacher reading in elementary schools, increasing proficiency for teachers to be done at the institutional level, which requires greater accountability and reporting to TSPC. Should Oregon move towards additional proficiency requirements related to reading, as other states have done, TSPC would be responsible for administering each of these, and they could potentially incur costs as well. And House Bill 2624, a good representative of this bill, which we're working on in higher ed, in order to increase, it's all targeted to increase the amount of CTE professionals, those who can instruct CTE courses in a classroom setting. TSPC is going to be charged with establishing requirements for educator prep programs in order to be able to issue licenses in a more timely fashion to professionals. While this goal may be achieved, there will be increased monitoring of training programs, which will come at an increased cost and time as well. Another problem is just the access of knowledge and information about policy changes and implementation. The commission right now has a single link to the legislature through its executive director, who experiences what I would characterize as a burdensome amount of work and shoulders a tremendous amount of responsibility under the current structure. So the solution with this bill would be that the Oregon Department of Ed has the personnel that can provide information and background on policy, therefore allowing the commission and their employees to be better informed about changes to teacher licensure and teacher certification and the reason behind them. Another problem is rule changes sometimes get lost in communication. The commission establishes rule changes, which are then carried out in day-to-day practices by its executive director through commission staff. When communication about the rule change breaks down and commission staff do not have the most up-to-date information, educators and school districts are negatively impacted. We actually had this brought to us by the employees, by the representative of the employee group at TSPC, who said it can be frustrating sometimes for those who are fielding inquiries and dealing with folks on the home front regarding changes in licensure when they really don't feel like they understand the why behind the policy or the driving force behind the policy or the changes. It's difficult for them to be able to deal with folks at the local level because they just don't feel like they're in the loop in terms of how the policies are created. So the solution would be the division head then established in the -1 amendments creates a better line of accountability for policy and rule changes and to be communicated. Administrative staff will be better served through best practices already occurring within ODE, and changes made within one body can create a more efficient process, thereby allowing staff to better support the profession. One more problem is the inherent separation that exists between the Department of Ed and TSPC. While efforts may be made to communicate between the two agencies, information can be lost in translation or not shared at all in day-to-day operations because of just the impact of the general workload that exists there. And finally, I think that the current situation as it exists creates a situation we find ourselves lagging in the ability to reach our 40-40-20 ambitious outcomes and based goals. Oregon needs greater policy alignment in education. The rankings of Oregon school system place an increased amount of pressure on the system to perform and the policymakers to address clear problems. And I believe the solution through the bill then would be creating greater accountability of TSPC to ODE and to the legislature and will allow policymakers to address inefficiencies and gaps that currently exist in information. So just to summarize, I really believe that creating this sort of alignment that we're talking about. In order to bring TSPC into more effective working relationship with existing education agencies would be a real plus for our system. In addition, I think providing additional wraparound support structures to TSPC to ensure that they are able to meet the very important licensure needs of our Oregon educators will do nothing but improve the morale and the ability of our teachers to feel like they are affirmed, that they're appreciated for what they're doing, and that they have the professional support and that they need, and that their needs can be processed in a timely fashion so that they can continue to focus on doing what's most important, which, of course, is teaching our kids. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I would say going forward, I think a couple other conversations that need to be had, I think, is perhaps the board composition. Maybe we want to be modified somewhat to include a member of a state board or a Department of Ed. That might be a positive as well, but that's not something we have currently in view, but we'd be happy to entertain that. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Any questions?
And I would say there's a number of folks behind us that have.
Yes, we have about 8 people to testify.
Yep.
Representative Johnson, Madam Chair, I just wanted to ask, this is quite a body of work, and it looks like you've been spending some time on it. So I was just wondering, was there a work group during the interim then that worked on this, or who was at the table to kind of talk about the particulars?
Thank you for the question, Rep. McLean. There has been a lot of work going on this with different entities. I've spoken to representatives from OSBA. I've talked with representatives from other school districts. I'm being a school board member, you know, I have those connections as well. I have talked with the Department of Ed about this. We've gotten some input from Chalkboard and so forth. And I've actually spoken with our TSP director, Ms. Chamberlain, about it as well, just to kind of let her know what we were involved with trying to do. And have had contact with OEA, I would say, on the issue as well.
Okay. Can I have one follow-up? And this is real quick. I just, I'm trying to get a picture for, you know, where the work has been. Since I've been here 9 whole weeks, you know, there seems to be...
For veteran now.
There seems to be a lot of movement right now in education as far as structure. I mean, we've got a lot of different bodies that are now, you know, sort of being integrated to do a lot of different work, and sometimes to me it looks like it explodes it, and sometimes it looks like it's trying to, you know, to really tighten it up. But what is your impression of the ability, not, you've talked a lot about the Standard and Practice Commission, but what about the Department of Ed?
Mm-hmm.
We've given them a lot of responsibilities too, and some of these 3 items that you listed on that last page, to me, Department of Ed has a lot of responsibilities there as well. And so, if not all mm-hmm. of a responsibility. So have you really looked at the budget of the Department of Ed as far as what you're asking them to take on?
Good question. At this point in time, you're aware that TSPC is totally funded primarily by fees.
Yeah.
And I know they do have requests in for raising those fees fairly significantly,
yes.
which I think is needful.
Yes.
I think they're underfunded with their current fee structure. So they would continue to be self-funding, even though they would be a division within ODE.
Okay.
So we wouldn't include them, or they would take out another lion's share, a big chunk out of that ODE budget. Now, I would just say there could be, and you may likely hear from folks today, that there will be some sort of cost in absorbing, initially at least, getting things up to working and getting folks up to speed and so forth. But I would feel, and I believe, that the long-term efficiencies that can come via some of the support structures that exist within ODE. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would say, just to talk really directly, I think if you look at the TSPC website and some of the technology they're currently using, it really needs help. But they have their, so the point is, they're going to have to actually hire some outside third-party entities, I think, to come in and help them redesign that. Or they may be able to use folks on staff at ODE that have the capacity to do that in-house as well. So
okay.
I think there could be some trade-offs, but I think in the net, I think we're looking at probably a wash regarding costs.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of things, the red flags that sort of go up for me. One is, I know the capacity for TSPC has been pretty difficult because of the fees, number of people. I remember having some request for higher fees and them not getting it, and as a result, the backlog started to take place. And I'm not sure that this really addresses that, mostly because I'm not convinced that ODE is necessarily the tower of stability regarding working with these things, and I'm not sure if moving them into that system really helps it or helps them. So those are the things that are concerned. And then there's a basic concept for me. I consider teachers to be professionals.
Mm-hmm.
the accounting folks have a separate group. Dentistry has a separate group. And to have, I just am concerned about that. So help me, walk me through why this is better, quite frankly, to be supporting. And I would be real interested to hear more, and I guess we will hear more from OEA about this, because the groups that the folks that complain most about TSPC are the many of the teachers that I deal with, and I'm just curious about how they're feeling about this particular approach.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. The board as it exists, which is primarily an educator board, would continue to exist. Okay, it's not going to be dissolved in any way. So in terms of having a licensure board that honors and respects the profession of being instructors, whether the educator, I don't think would be diminished whatsoever, and that's not the intent here. I think there are other precedents regarding within the medical field. Some of the boards that oversee doctors and so forth are also aligned with OHA, I think, in terms of how they operate. I think there are precedents for that. So, again, the intent here is not to dissolve the board that deals directly with licensure issues and with dealing with those professionals, not in any way intended to dilute that or to cast dispersions upon that. So I still think that I agree totally. Educators and teachers are wonderful professionals, and they need more. Obviously, we take them very seriously, and we appreciate everything they do. So I, from my perspective, I don't see this as being a disillusion of where they currently are.
Let's speak a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, follow up.
Yeah, if we could.
If you can speak a little bit to the, we have dismantled a number of things in the Department of Ed over the years. I would fear that this would be one of those that could face that kind of dismantling as well. Not next year or 2 years down the line, but this is a concern because it was separate. You couldn't have. A barrier to understand how things have changed. I'm concerned about how that might be affected, how down the line it could be cut back or moved around or whatever within the department.
Well, it's hard to speak to the future. Obviously, that's not something that I'm anticipating here. But I do think that's why I thought it was informational to include some of the information from other states, mm-hmm. and how they organize and so forth. And there's a variety of ways that other states have licensure boards and so forth. And some are completely autonomous. Some are semi-autonomous, as we're proposing here, or they may not be autonomous at all. They are simply they're not a true standalone licensure board whatsoever. They are a part of a education agency within a state. So there's a number of models out there, and I guess it's just in the it's in the perception of whoever's looking at that to determine which is best. But I think, again, going to a semi-independent board would have, or division would have, a lot of benefits for support services to enable them to truly be able to do the job that they want to do in a consistent fashion, as well as maintain the autonomy and the honoring of that profession within for teachers as well.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Just more of a statement, really. I really thank Representative Johnson for bringing this forward, and I guess I'm more optimistic than some, but I signed on to the bill because I really feel that it gives us the opportunity to, as you said, better align our objectives, mm-hmm. and make sure that we can support what we're doing in terms of educational programs, but also, better. You're always reacting to economic pressures and mm-hmm. funding. Either it's never been an excess problem, but a lack of funding. And I really felt that it would be more of a stabilizing effect having TSPC be part of Department of Ed. That it's a relatively small organization within a relatively large one, and that there could be some resources that could be juggled around, if you will, to respond to future needs. I'm also optimistic, and I think that when people work together within the same organization and they're meeting on a regular basis, they talk to each other and not only get to know each other better. So I think it's more of a communications at a personal level, and at the program level. So, and I think we also, if we can do the funding we can that we need and get the level of service improved to teachers, and this is not a reflection on any of the work that's going on by the organization right now. I know they're working really hard at it. We've heard some good reports, but I would like to be able to support them more fully in what they're trying to do, because I think the direction is great. So how do we do that? And so I think this is really worth discussing.
Okay. Any other questions? Quickly, Representative
Barreto. Just a short one. Thank you, Madam Chair. As far as the other 19 states, do they use the same method of choosing their boards that's appointed by the governor?
Chair Doherty, Representative Barreto, that actually varies as well. Some of them are appointed by the state board, and some of them are appointed by the governor. It would really vary on the state.
Are any follow-up? Mm-hmm. Are any of them elected positions?
I don't believe so, but I don't know that I have a comprehensive understanding of each state to give you a definitive, but I can get back to you on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
okay, we're going to move on. We're going to try to get this. We may have to gavel you guys in and gavel you out. We've got another panel coming up, and somebody has to leave early. But with the next panel, why don't we have Cinda Rickards and Alan Barber. Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Doherty, Vice Chairs Frederick and Springer, and the House Committee on Education. My name is Cinda Rickert, and I currently serve as Superintendent of Jackson County School District 9 in Eagle Point, Oregon. It's my pleasure to be here today to testify why I, as a 39-year educator, believe it's absolutely essential to transfer Teacher Standards and Practices Commission to the Department of Education. TSPC is broken, in my opinion, beyond repair. The bottom line is TSPC seems to have no oversight, and unfortunately, this has resulted in a lack of accountability, a lack of transparency, and most important, it lacks the basic tenet of due process. As I share with you specific examples of what has been my personal experience with TSPC since January of 2011, over 4 years, I ask you to keep one question in mind. Who's responsible for this lack of accountability, this lack of transparency, and this lack of due process? I have submitted a document to you titled Testament to TSPC Mismanagement. At this time, however, I will simply share some examples that clearly fail to meet TSPC's own goals, as identified by Executive Director Chamberlain. I would like to begin with a goal, TSPC's goal, to provide timely, high-quality services to licensees, higher education, and the public. In January 2011, that's over 4 years ago, a person, and I know who the person was, but at the time unknown to me, filed a complaint with TSPC alleging that I was using classified employees as school counselors at Eagle Point High School. In August of 2012, this is 1.5 years later, I received my first notification of a preliminary investigation in possible misconduct in licensing of educators. In December of 2012, I received a notice of opportunity for a hearing. Obviously, I'd be entitled to a hearing, stating that the commission was charging me with gross neglect of duty. In July of 2013, my attorney received notice that a hearing was set for November of 2013. That was 2.5 years after the complaint was filed. In November of 2013, and now we're almost 3 years down the road, I did find out that there was going to be a postponement of my hearing because AAG Ramirez was still trying to determine my, quote, violations. In November of 2013, TSPC Executive Director Chamberlain told me I had never been charged And the complaint that our district was using classified employees as school counselors at the high school was dismissed by the commission at their most recent meeting. But a year before that, I was told I was charged. I think some timelines were not meeting very good timely, high-quality services. A second goal that TSPC states is theirs says maintain and develop clear, concise, and easy-to-understand administrative rules. In our school district, we never hear a complaint about any employee without first notifying them that we will be hearing such a complaint and giving them their due process rights and an option for them to either be in attendance or even request an open hearing. In my case, when I found out that there was a complaint and the commission was going to hear it and determine if I were to be charged, I traveled to Salem and I requested that I be allowed to come in and hear what the complaints were against me. I was denied entrance and told that that doesn't happen. When I stated that I would wait around, because again, in our school district, our public board always votes in public, not in executive session. I said, I'll wait then and hear the vote. I'd like to hear the vote and see how that goes. But I was told again I didn't really need to wait around because the commission votes in executive session, and I would not be allowed to hear that. As I had said before, I was entitled to a hearing, which is great due process that one should have. But interestingly enough, almost 3 years after this complaint was filed and we were moving toward a hearing, I had been offered a private reprimand that could go away after a year. But I said no, I'd done nothing wrong, and I really wanted to have a hearing. I was told over 3 years after the original complaint that AAG Ramirez is still trying to determine the violation that had occurred. My concern about legislative oversight here even involves you to some degree, in that as we were moving toward a hearing, of course, we exchanged discovery, both sides, and I found out that one of the commissioners was involved in the investigation. She was a former employee in our district, and as a result, in July of 2014, so not quite a year ago, her name was withdrawn by the governor of Oregon at the time to no longer serve on the commission. To my understanding, she's still there. So I really wonder, where is the oversight? A third goal that TSPC identifies for itself is to establish high standards for educator professional conduct and regularly communicate those standards to the field. I'm going to make a little stretch here, so I give you, I'm stretching.
Can I
bring it up. But what I'd share with you is that I'm thinking that if we establish high standards and professional standards for educators, we'd certainly have them for ourselves as the commission. And some examples where I take considerable issue with that is that this case, this is a person who, one, the same person is behind all this, but this case had gone through ODE in 2010, and ODE found that we were in compliance with guidance and counseling, and all this information was sent to TSPC, but it seems in ways like it was disregarded. When we exchanged our discovery, of course you get some information, and in those emails we found that investigator Tanya Figgett and TSPC Commissioner Shirley Blanchard, regarding the investigation of Rickert, the Commissioner Blanchard offered to get the quote under the hood information on Rickert. Now this commissioner is supposed to be sitting on an unbiased party to hear my case. Again, I had a very difficult time finding out what the charges were against me. I do want to make a point that I know many, many really great educators serve on that commission, and that's not what I'm saying is that they aren't really good dedicated educators. But what has happened is when I went up there that day, I found out that Ms. Chamberlain wasn't even going to take in key documents to the commission that I think would have clearly disproved anything about there being a case against me. And we were able then to send some documents in, but they had been omitted. And I don't really understand that. And again, the idea of electing to charge but not determining or telling me what my violations were is a little uncomfortable. After we were told that the hearing outcomes, we were told by TSPC, don't expect a dismissal because that never happens. That's before.
But you summarize it. Yes. We've got lots of people to speak behind you in another panel.
Yes, I would be glad to summarize it. I guess my concerns are it truly is broken. And I feel, as a leader, I feel strongly that leadership really matters, and it makes a big difference how leaders move forward. I really would like to see it transferred to ODE. I was sad to learn today about Rob Saxton, because I do believe from a practitioner's point of view, ODE has made some really great changes last few years for us, and we're moving forward. It feels great. And so I would like to see that kind of leadership of TSPC. I did also submit to you a colleague of mine, Dave Orr. He's a retired superintendent. He retired in June of 2007, and yet he was charged by TSPC for misassigning school counselors in 2008-10, and I think you heard me say he retired in 2007.
Thank you.
So some problems. This came out in November 2013 in the middle of my case. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will. I'll be brief.
And thank you.
I was today when I got here. I want to thank Representative Johnson for putting this together. And I don't understand all the terminology, but the Dash 1 amendments.
Oh, could you identify yourself for the
record,
please?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Alan Barber. I'm the Human Resources Director in the Eagle Point School District. I apologize. Yeah. When I read through the Dash 1 amendments, I feel really cool saying that, by the way. Representative Johnson has, he lists problems and solutions. And what I want you to hear from an HR director's perspective is the problems that he lists, those are day-to-day problems in my world. We were at the Portland Job Fair yesterday, hundreds of districts represented. Every HR director there came over and gave me scenarios and questions and concerns about those same problems. And the one that jumps out at me most, and I have tons of examples I would love to share, I'm not going to have time to do that, but it talks specifically about, let me read it to you from his writing. The commission currently has a single link to the legislator through the executive director, who experiences a burdensome amount of work and shoulders a tremendous amount of responsibility in the current structure. That is certainly true, and we see that. We see emails from TSPC employees, and they reference Executive Director Chamberlain will have to make a decision on this particular issue, or executive director will make a decision on this. And these are day-to-day questions. There should be a process in place for these employees to make these decisions. There should be a clearly outlined procedure, but it's not there. We have emails that say, from the desk of Ms. Chamberlain, this is what's supposed to happen. The problem with that is one day we get one answer, the next day we get another. I'm going to share one specific example that happened with a teacher in our district. And I agree, we have tons of fantastic teachers, and we want our licensing agent to be efficient. It needs to be, especially in lean times. This particular teacher had submitted everything. They waited several months. They finally got an email saying they were lacking transcripts. Even though all the information was sent in the same package, the teacher was scrambling to get transcripts. Less than an hour later, we get another email regarding the same teacher, and it said, quote, "This should make Mrs. So-and-so and Eagle Point a very happy place. Here's her license." Okay. A few minutes later, we got an email from another TSP employee stating, "Wow, we shouldn't have sent that license. Can you please ask this teacher to submit those transcripts quickly so we don't have to pull the license?" And what that illustrates is just a lack of procedural, it illustrates dysfunction in the procedures that exist. And it impacts every teacher in our state, in every district. A personal example, 2 years ago, I was applying for my superintendent's license in Oregon and the state of Kentucky. I'm from the South. And I got the Kentucky license in about 4 weeks. It took months and months to get the Oregon license. I am a proud Oregon educator, and I want to be a part of this education system. I love what's going on with ODE. The recent legislation, and all of you guys have been a part of that, it seems to be really working the right way for Oregon right now. And I believe that adding this TSPC group underneath the umbrella, it provides assistance, it provides leadership, it provides oversight. And one person can't do that. Right now, the executive director of TSPC is burdened with all of that work by herself. And I think the additional oversight would help improve efficiency. And I'll leave it there. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Fine, thank you. Are there any questions of the panel? Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
Do you want to gavel back in?
Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to gavel out, and Oh, we're fine? Okay, never mind. Okay, so the next people we have here are Judy Brzezender, Kathleen Sundin, and Chris Kuka. Thank you. Going.
Good morning.
And you don't have to. You can be about this far away.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Chair Doherty, Vice Chairs Frederick and Springer, and members of the committee. For the record, I am Judy Brzezender, teacher, Commissioner TSPC, Chairman of Program Approval. However, I'm addressing you today on my own behalf, and I thank you for the opportunity. I am voicing strong opposition to House Bill 3339. First, a little bit about me. I have been a teacher in Oregon public schools for over 30 years. I am the third generation of my family to teach in Oregon public schools. I am married to a teacher and a counselor, and I'm also the proud parent of a teacher in Oregon public schools, now the fourth generation. Education is our family business. And it is my opinion that the most important things happening in Oregon are in our public school classrooms. We need qualified and highly trained teachers and administrators. And in support of that, we need a professional licensing board that continues to set high standards for teacher prep programs. TSPC regularly reviews programs and provides feedback to the education programs in Oregon colleges and universities. This system of program approval would be lost or compromised without TSPC. Despite staffing and budget challenges, TSPC continues to provide quality service to the professionals they license. Each license application is carefully reviewed, guaranteeing all licensed teachers, administrators, school counselors, school psychologists, and school social workers meet high standards and are qualified professionals. For some, timeliness has been an issue, but doing away with TSPC will not remediate that. By shifting this responsibility to an already overburdened ODE, it may only get worse. That brings me to what I consider to be the finest, most important responsibility of TSPC, and that is the setting of high standards for professional conduct. The current commission is near perfect by design. It includes 8 licensed teachers, 4 licensed administrators from all levels, K through 12, both rural and city school districts. There's also a member from a school board and faculty from both public and private colleges and universities. This thoughtful group of people come together to weigh each discipline case before them with care and thoughtfulness and seriousness. This responsibility should be kept in the hands of educators and not the school board, state school board. Really, there are no compelling reasons to pass House Bill 3339. The elimination of a 50-year-old educator professional licensure board just does not make sense. It would be a mistake that would do harm to the education profession, to education prep programs at Oregon colleges and universities, and to the children in Oregon's classrooms. TSPC needs to continue to function as a professional licensing board. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Chair Doherty, Vice Chairs Frederick and Springer, members of the committee. I'm Kathleen Sundell, a professional educator for 40 years, currently serving as full-time release president of Salem-Keizer Education Association and a TSPC commissioner. Today, I'm not a commissioner. I'm speaking on my own behalf, and thank you for this opportunity to testify in opposition of 3339. As you know, House Bill 3339 abolishes the 50-year-old Educator Professional Licensure Board, the Teacher Standards and Practices Services Commission and moves all powers and duties from the Commission to the State Board of Education. It creates a new division with the Oregon Department of Education called Teacher Standards and Practices Division with a limited advisory role. The State Board of Education, made up of public members, would be responsible for establishing the professional licensure standards for teachers, administrators, school counselors, school psychologists, and school social workers. Currently employed teachers and administrators are statutorily prohibited from serving as a State Board of Education member. The State Board of Education would be responsible for setting standards and determining the quality of educator preparation programs for both public and private universities and colleges. In Oregon, professions such as nurses, social workers, lawyers, builders, and doctors are responsible for standards and discipline of their own profession through independent state licensing boards. House Bill 3339 would render licensed educators the only profession in the state without a representative state licensure board. The current commission is made up of 4 licensed administrators, 8 licensed teachers, 2 higher education educator preparation faculty members, and 1 school board member. TSBC commissioners are approved by the governor's office, and TSBC staff work closely with the Oregon Department of Education to implement any federal requirements and required oversight of the licensed staff in Oregon public schools. This allows teachers in Oregon to attain the direct influence inherent in a profession and allows these boards to achieve the goals of rigorous standards, reliable and valid assessments of prospective teachers and teacher prep programs, and aligned continuum of professional practice and maintenance of high standards. House Bill 3339 will not make things better. It will place teacher licensure in an already overburdened department with many other priorities. It will place the responsibility for licensure in the hands of the State Board of Education rather than the hands of education professionals. That would be a huge step backward for education profession in Oregon. I urge your opposition for House Bill 3339, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Quigley.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity.
You can stay back from the microphone.
I can stay back.
Perfect.
I'm a teacher. I'm used to projecting my voice. I'm trying to modulate correctly here.
Perfect.
Thank you for the opportunity to come before you. I don't have a script. I feel unprepared. I will be succinct. First, your endurance for attention is quite impressive and inspiring for me. I just want to
Just identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Chris Kuka. I am a teacher from Ben Lapine Schools. I am a science teacher. I have been teaching for 26 years.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I began teaching at a time when science teachers were at a need. When I met people on the street, people would ask what I did. They assumed I was in construction. My response is I'm a teacher. They ask what I teach, and I'd say I teach science. And the response, without exception, was, that's great. We need science teachers. We need good teachers. Today, I'm reluctant to say what I do because it is one of the most maligned professions. I spend most of my time defending teachers. I am an educator. I'm a teacher. I'm in a classroom. I have 200 students, freshmen, that I see every day. For an hour every day, I am the most important person in their family's lives. I am a teacher in the policymaking process. I'm not a policymaker in the educational world. So I speak to you from a classroom. Teachers are, it's difficult to be a teacher without a voice. Education policy has changed just about everything I do in my classroom. And without a voice, it really becomes magnified. There's a difference between being 30, 40 years in education and being 30, 40 years in a classroom. And I'll tell you that. When I hear people talk about policy, when I hear people talk about education, what's best, I ask 2 questions. What do you teach? How large are your class sizes? I just want to close with one story. It's short, I promise. Over the past 6 months, possibly 6 months, we as the commission have been discussing licensure redesign and renewal. I take the discussions back to my school. I send emails out to my colleagues.
I talk to my HR person. I talk to my superintendent. I talk to my administrators. What are your concerns? Tomorrow I have two teachers from Ben Lapine. With the support of OEA and the support of Ben Lapine Schools for financial support, coming before the commission and testifying regarding license redesign. That policy process started with me, reached into the classroom, and now comes back to the commission. I would challenge Oregon Department of Education to match that. I stand before you, or I sit before you, with the request that you do not silence the voice of classroom teachers. Please allow classroom teachers to act like professionals, be professionals. Teaching is a very complex, complicated process. It's not pretty. The three people before you are in the trenches, we're in the mud. We get dirty. But that's the education process today. Thank you, and I think we're happy to take any questions.
Okay, thank you. Okay, do you have any questions of the panel?
Madam Chair.
Did Leah want to speak?
Yeah. We're not going to let you off the hook yet.
Madam Chair, I just I want you to know that there are some of us up here who have been in the classroom, and I did teach for 42 years in Hillsboro, Oregon, and I teach speech and English and debate. And I want you to know that we do appreciate everything you do with your freshmen every day. And I thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, anyone can have freshmen all day long is, you know, special.
First graders.
they're good. They listen to their teacher.
They're adorable, but yeah. They're busy.
Any other questions?
She's not the SBC. She wants to.
Okay. Any other questions, this panel? Okay, Ms. Bates, go ahead. And if you could just get a microphone.
Sure. I have a good teacher voice, too. After 43 years of teaching, I think I've got it down. But I'll do my best.
Right.
Madam Chair, I just
want... And make sure you identify yourself for the record.
I'm Leah Bates. I'm a teacher, educator in the state of Oregon for over 43 years. Mm-hmm. I am also a commissioner, and I just wanted to let you know that I support what these folks have brought to you today, but I didn't want to let this opportunity pass without my saying we need to keep the TSBC as it is, and I appreciate you listening. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much. Okay, any questions? If not, thank you. Okay, the next group we have up is Chuck Bennett, Jim Green, and Phil Donovan. Okay, you guys know the routine.
Chuck?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. I don't usually do this, but I'll just add that's 2,500 school administrators who are elementary, high school principals, many licensed central office people, as well as superintendents. So these are folks affected by the future of TSBC. I'll tell you, just on the surface of it, we are opposed to House Bill 3339. Certainly appreciate the opportunity to have a full discussion of TSPC, of its funding, of its personnel. Almost any aspect of this agency, but at this point are in no way prepared to take an agency of its long history, its long success, its high potential of service with the education profession, and turn it over to the Department of Education. There is no indication that that's the right home. We have testified in other forums about our concern with the further centralization of the education system into one place run by one person, the superintendent of public instruction, the governor. including the State Board of Education, which when I took a quick look at it, did not find that it appeared to be credentialed correctly for the oversight of a profession as complicated as one that involves 50,000 of our fellow Oregonians in the profession of educating our children. Those are seven fine people. I can only identify one or two that have been educators, and it makes me uncomfortable to think of turning this over without a really full discussion of what's going on here. Yeah. I don't want to suggest that the folks I represent don't have serious concerns. You heard one today. Cinda Rickert, the superintendent down in Eagle Point, I think gave you a strong and really interesting and really concerning description of her experience. How much of it is TSPC, is statutory, the limitations of the law, I don't know. But it's certainly worth being part of a full discussion of what's going on in the regulation of the folks licensed in this industry. I also, one of my other superintendents is Heidi Seip from Umatilla. She's the chair of TSPC. She sent me a very strongly worded description of her concerns with this. I've covered several of them right now. But I do want to say Superintendent Seip's behalf, because I'm not going to go through specifically all of her issues, we were just handed today a double 88-page amendment to a 44-page bill. And I haven't had a chance yet, and I know she hasn't had a chance yet, to really go into detail in what really is a complete rewrite of this bill with some really interesting ideas. And I hope that if you're going to in any way proceed with this idea, that you'll move it into an interim discussion, give all interested parties a real opportunity, give yourselves an opportunity to evaluate whether or not Department of Ed and the State Board represent the kind of oversight you're looking for. And then I guess finally, having been here as long as I have, I've watched the funding of this organization over the years. And I just got to tell you, TSPC, for what it is, which is the licensing board of a group of almost 50,000 professionals in what I believe is one of the most important professions in the state, is seriously underfunded. It's the licensing is in statute. It's not in rule, the licensing cost. It has not arisen for over 10 years. We hold them to a really high standard of performance. We all do. I think we really want these licenses issued quickly. We want discipline done, hopefully not summarily, but responsibly and in a timely fashion. You can't do it on the budget they're operating under, and I hope you'll talk to your colleagues on ways and means in support of their proposals for fee increases as well as for added FTEs to augment this program. It is desperately needed.
Okay, thank you. And I just want to, I'm watching time, so if we can.
Thank you, Chair Doherty.
For the record,
my name is Phil Donovan. I'm here on behalf of the Chalkboard Project. I want to begin by thanking Representative Johnson for bringing forward this legislation. It raises a really important issue, and for us, that's a stronger connection between teacher preparation, the licensure of teachers, and the staffing needs of the school districts, all with a focus and goal of improving educational outcomes. Some of you know about our work with Teach Oregon. For those who don't, just briefly, it's a chalkboard initiative that's giving school districts and universities, and specifically the schools of education, the opportunity to work together in preparing the next generation of effective and a diverse workforce. And through this work, we're seeing the need for program approval alignment, something that's currently at TSPC, and coursework, something that's currently at the schools of education. education that's relevant to improving the student teaching experience. Another example is focusing on the diversity of Oregon's educators. It's a statewide goal. It's one that ODE and TSPC and even OEIB are responsible for achieving this goal, and it feels like greater alignment can move us in the right direction on that issue. And not to mention our support for a seamless P20 system. We think, again, intentional alignment between the strategic goals at TSPC and ODE and OEIB makes a lot of sense. So the issue that's before you all is whether or not the capacity and structure of the TSPC is able to fully support these educational efforts. We believe the intent of this legislation is to address that need. We agree with that intent. We think there's probably more conversation about how we get there, and we'd be pleased to be a part of that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Green?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Green on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association. And if you look at the sign-up sheet, I didn't know what to check for or against on this bill. But I think what it does do is raise a level of conversation with one of the most important licensing boards that we have in this state. I think Mr. Bennett said it probably better than any of us could. I think the biggest problem you've got within this agency right now is they are severely underfunded. If you go to their website and look what it says, it's somewhat shocking, and I don't blame Ms. Chamberlain and her staff for this. Right now, they are working through license applications from December 4th. They are responding from emails that they received on January 13th. They plain don't have the staff to do the work right now. And that is frustrating because as I travel the state, I hear from Mr. Bennett's members and OEA members about the frustration they have. And in our school district in Salem-Keizer, I've heard the frustration of license turnaround because now it's taking up to 20 weeks to turn around a license application. And when we're trying to determine how many teachers we're going to have in schools across the state, where they're going to fit within our K-8 or 8 through 12 schools, it's somewhat frustrating. I think the problem is, I did some quick research, they're the only license fee in statute. Every other licensing agency that I could find, whether it was medical, dentist, accountancy, boiler operators, boiler inspectors, they were all set by the rule by the agency. They have been locked in at $100, and that's a license fee that you either pay for 3 or 5 years, for over 10 years. I mean, their ability to investigate and do the jobs that they're required to do is significantly hampered by that fee. Now, I'm going to tell you all a dirty little secret. I'm also an attorney, so I know what it costs to pay for my license. It's $537 a year for me to be a licensed attorney in this state. I think as professionals, teachers understand the need to pay more in order to get the service out of their licensing agency that they have. But when you look at their key performance measures that they handed out at their Ways and Means testimony before the Subcommittee on Education, they're just not plain able to do the job with the staffing and the amount of funds they have to do the job. Remember, they're an other funds agency. All their funds come from fees paid to them either for licensure or for criminal background checks. And I think we seriously need to take a look at that licensing amount to be able to put personnel into their agency to do the work they've got. I believe they've got some pops in their budget, and I would encourage you, and I know Representative Springer, you sat on that committee and listened to the testimony, but they're not able to do their job. And that's where the frustration comes from teachers, administrators, superintendents, and even from school boards across the state. That's not Ms. Chamberlain's fault or her staff's fault. But when you see they're not able to respond within 20 weeks for a licensure application, that causes some concern. And I think that's the frustration you hear from folks. Mm-hmm. Sure, there's stories out there about what can happen, but I think the main thing you need to focus on here is fund this agency and put together a group to say, are we doing the things we want to do with regard to this agency? One of which is program approval, and I'll finish up here, Madam Chair. One of the complaints I've heard from teachers when they came out of a program for teacher education was it wasn't aligned with what they were supposed to teach in the classroom. We now have Common Core standards, and we have not yet in all of our teacher education programs aligned the curriculum within those higher ed programs to meet the needs of our teachers. I just had a conversation with elementary school teachers here in my district in Salem-Keizer, brand new teachers who said, I need more help because I wasn't trained properly at the institution of higher ed to do what I'm asked to do in the classroom. And I think it's a broader conversation than just TSPC. And I would encourage you to look at this as we move forward with a fee bill for TSPC and maybe into the interim to assure that they meet their key performance measures. Because I think what you're hearing is a lot of chatter about their inability to do their job. They plain don't have the money and the resources to do it.
Okay, thank you. Any quick questions? Okay, seeing none. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, that's who we had signed up for this bill. So with that, I will close the work session or the public hearing on House Bill 3339 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2982. You guys all want to come up?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2982 appropriates monies from the general fund to the Department of Education for the purpose of funding proficiency-based teaching and learning demonstration sites. It declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2015, and it contains a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I was also a teacher, so I can project. So if I get too loud, let me know. But Chair Doherty, co-chairs and members of the committee, thank you so much for hearing us today. For the record, my name is Tamara Bush Johnson. I'm a former teacher and currently executive director of the Business Education Compact, a 31-year-old nonprofit organization serving students of Oregon. Unfortunately, due to a last-minute change, Representative Comp could not be here today, so she sends her apologies. She's a co-sponsor of the bill. So you're seeing the summary of the bill on the screen there. And just as a general, I'll be setting the scene, and then we have practitioners here who will speak to the bill.
And we've got till about 20, not quite 20, till we have more business that we have to do. So.
Okay. All right. I'm scheduled for like 7 minutes testing it, and then maybe three.
So I want to make sure everyone
we'll
has
be
a
able
chance.
To make it. BEC has been leading this grassroots teaching and learning effort in Oregon for the past 10 years, and until last year when we did receive a grant from ODE, all funding really came from the private sector, either through corporations or foundations that BEC solicited to begin the work in the state of Oregon. So, and the recipient of the grant came through House Bill 3233 and the Teacher Quality Network. We created, and the purpose was to create four demonstration sites and schools in proficiency-based teaching and learning, and this bill renews those sites and, if possible, to expand those to more schools. The overview is I'll speak to those three pieces that we have in college and career readiness, the purpose, and our what should you expect from the outcomes. So for college and career readiness, this bill is truly about equity. Proficiency practices prepare all of our students for college and career readiness, so no child is left behind. As you are acutely aware, I know, challenges are many for U.S. and Oregon education to prepare all students from the variety of backgrounds for careers in college. In our current system, students spend a standard amount of seat time in class and move to the next grade level at the end of each school year with their age-based cohorts. Students are required only to earn a cumulative grade of a D-minus, just above an F for a diploma, and indicating anything from a mastery of those standards to large gaps in knowledge and skills. So 40-40-20 cannot be reached at all, much less in 2025, if we continue to graduate so many students unprepared. Can there be a more essential investment that you can make in teaching and learning activities that directly impact student learning? Proficiency practices directly impact student learning, and it certifies that each graduate is prepared in the knowledge and application of the required standards. So the purpose of our House Bill 2982 is four sites were chosen across the state, and you can see them listed here, and we have a principal of one of those sites here from Madison Middle School. We'll be speaking to you shortly. And they were chosen across the state representing diverse geography, racial, ethnic, demographics and numbers of economically disadvantaged youth and low achievement scores in math and reading. The initial investment, $415,000, serving more than 710 educators and 33,441 students at an average of $585 per teacher and $12 a student. So very low investment for the high return on increased student achievement. So one of the other purposes, classroom of House Bill 2982 is certainly the continuation and expansion of these sites. Classroom learning and teaching practices are the key to improve student outcomes. And so the research is extensive. I know you've clear about that fact. So if we're to expect significant student gains, then students must have these clear learning targets, be assessed in meaningful ways in which they will receive helpful feedback and interventions and support, and have that necessary support to be successful and to own their own learning. Research shows that engagement and motivation increase when students know what is expected of them and what being proficient really looks like in a standard. So each student must have those expectations that they can be successful, because right now some of them think that they're stupid and that they cannot learn, when really they just need more time and more support to be successful. So teachers must not only learn these new practices, but internalize these practices. So, the purpose is the possible of expansion. This slide is all about the importance of independent evaluation data. We need to know what works, and we need to know what isn't working, and we need that data to inform on forward practices. So, with this data, we can leverage the state's investment in proficiency by replicating these effective practices. The key objectives, what will you receive from this bill, is the first objective is it's all about a set of beliefs that we're going to expand the number of students that will have access to these practices. Proficiency is about beliefs that students learn at different rates, that all students can learn given time and support, and that student learning gaps can be filled. So simply stated, it's an investment in equity for all students. The other outcomes is that 40-40-20 addresses the need to graduate all students, but can't we do better than just graduate those students? Since a D-minus qualifies for graduation credit, shouldn't our goal be to graduate all students with knowledge and skills in the standards to think critically, to communicate effectively, to innovate, and to adapt in our ever-changing world? I suggest that graduation rates in itself should not be the only goal, but that we need to look at what a diploma actually represents, and at the very least, eliminate the remediation that's needed when they go on to college. So the quickest gains can be realized in low-performing schools. And one of our sites, Madras High School, which you saw on a previous screen, is one of our sites. They have 722 students and 75% economically disadvantaged youth with high levels of diversity. After 4 years of working with proficiency, they have demonstrated tremendous growth in both reading and math achievement, especially in the disadvantaged youth. So the key objectives, again, is to strengthen teacher effectiveness. The key objectives and outcome is to increase the students. The most important factor, again, in student achievement is the classroom teacher. The higher the level of teacher effectiveness, the higher the level of student achievement. So with this ODE grant, BEC was able to create these valuable teacher resources to help students. This is heavy lifting and a new change in how they teach. So we have a portal for the curriculum. We have a list of assessments and numerous ways in which we support, ongoing support to these sites. We also want to collect and talk about the data, and I've already mentioned the importance of data. The accountability and transparency to return on your investment is critical. So what is also critical is to expand the number of teacher leaders in all parts of the state to make it more cost-effective to reach our most rural areas in the state. So I think we can all concur in conclusion that changing teacher practices and the culture of learning in schools happens over years, not just mere months. So hence the importance of the continued funding for our proficiency, and so that in terms of keeping that momentum going in our sites that we have already started this past school year. So I ask for your support in that. You have comments that have been included. I don't know if they came on paper or on your screen of community endorsements for this. And I'd like to introduce Kelly Carlisle, who will speak next.
Okay, thank you.
Quick question.
Wait, the whole panel's done.
I think it would really be appropriate.
Okay, quick question, 4 seconds.
Oh,
go.
Yes.
Could you really paint a picture for us what proficiency is? We've used the term a lot. What's different about it? I think I know. I'd like to hear.
I think that will be addressed with Rebecca as a teacher, and so okay. In saving time, Representative Bearden, would that be okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Please go.
Okay.
Chair Doherty and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kelly Carlisle, Assistant Superintendent for the Salem-Keizer Public Schools, and I am here in support of House Bill 2982. As an educational leader in Oregon, I have seen the benefits of proficiency in the classroom, especially as it relates to strong and equitable outcomes for all students. It is with that lens of equity that I wish to address my comments today. One of the common misperceptions about proficiency is that it's a grading system. But when all we do is trade one grading system for another, we don't see the shifts in practice that are necessary for all students to succeed. In reality, proficiency is a teaching methodology of which only a small part is grading. Diane Smith gathered together materials and practices into a book published through the Business Education Compact entitled It's About Time, which clearly and succinctly outlines six constructs that are the basis for proficiency. These constructs are the founded upon research-based best practices that should be happening in every educator's practice. Proficiency also incorporates student ownership of learning in that if it's well implemented, it requires students to think at a metacognitive level, to articulate their thinking about their own learning so that they remain engaged in the process. Additionally, proficiency begins to lay the groundwork for more equitable opportunities in the classroom. The reflection construct, as outlined in Diane Smith's book, requires teachers to reflect on their own practice and the instructional decisions that they are making in the classroom. It is this reflection that becomes the perfect opportunity for teachers to consider what they should do differently in order to meet the needs of all of their students. This is a perfect doorway into culturally responsive practices based upon standards, where ultimately all students see themselves in the instruction and have a clear understanding of their own mastery levels. Some may ask, well, what's the difference between standards-based teaching and proficiency-based teaching? The answer is time. Standards-based teaching may impact the teaching methodology. However, the instruction is beholden to the calendar as opposed to the rate of student learning. In proficiency, the rate of student learning drives the work, not the calendar. Opposition to proficiency usually comes from a lack of understanding, both on the practitioner's part and maybe on the community's part. This very reason speaks clearly to why we need to make proficiency education a priority. Even higher education is beginning to see trends in student attrition, where straight-A high school students are dropping out halfway through their freshman year or are having to take a remedial class because the A didn't represent what they truly learned. The issue of remedial classes, especially in this state where a significant population of our students live in poverty, is a major concern because it can become a pathway to inequity, and thus it works against the state of Oregon's 40-40-20 initiative. One savvy teacher may, all on her own, figure out how to implement a really effective model of proficiency in the classroom. However, down the hall, her colleagues may be really struggling with how to make the conversion from one teaching model to the next. What we know about this work is the implementation of any instructional practice across a K-12 system with consistency and high quality requires really good professional development and a reliable set of classroom resources. Good work has already gotten underway in this endeavor, and what we need now is to continue it and expand it across Oregon. For these reasons, I request and encourage your support of House Bill 2982. This is what will make proficiency accessible to more students, which I believe is critical to the equity conversation going on in Oregon.
Okay.
Thank you for this opportunity to share my comments with you today.
Thank you very much. Okay, next.
Chair
and
Doherty.
And if we have written testimony, if you just want to summarize.
Yeah, that's my plan.
Okay, thank you very much. Teacher.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott March. I'm the principal at Madison Middle School, one of the demonstration sites, and I'm here in favor of House Bill 2982. I think these folks have talked about the nuts and bolts of the whole thing, but for us just beginning this process, one of the big pieces has been a paradigm shift with students. As a middle school teacher and a middle school administrator, I hear middle school doesn't count. I'll learn this when I get to high school. You hear that from students on a daily basis. We all know it's not true. It's the foundation, but there is a modicum of truth to that in the students' eyes. And what this has done, the work that we've done with proficiency-based, is help us switch that paradigm. A traditional grading system of A, B, C, D, if I get a C in math, I'm a C math student. That's all I'm going to be. It's a one-and-done sort of thing. With the multiple opportunities for students to master a subject and to demonstrate their proficiency, it suddenly switches that to smart is not something I am, smart is something I can become with a little bit of effort. When I came to Madison 4 years ago, our hallways were closed in the morning. Students were not allowed into the classrooms, you know, unless they were making up a test or whatnot. Now our classrooms before school are a vibrant learning community where students are in getting pre-taught, retaught. They're demonstrating their proficiencies in multiple and different ways with our teachers. Honor roll is another example. We've all seen that, and it tends to be kind of a stagnant list of names. It's the same faces coming up time and time again. We just had our second honor roll last week, and I asked students, how many of you are new to this, to the honor roll? A third of the students stood up. They were brand new. And so that's an exciting demonstration of how effort was able to help students make the change. We as educators all know that students can learn. Every student can learn. What we also know is that they don't learn at the same rate, and that's been spoken to here. My staff is excited about what proficiency-based can do for us in allowing students to be very clear about what the learning targets are, what they have to master, and allowing them to do it at a pace that's appropriate for them. For those students that are ready to go and are school savvy and know how to do school, they can move along quickly. Those that need a little extra time can get just that. With your support, we'd like to continue that work. So thank you.
Okay, great. Okay.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rebecca Stenke, and I'm here in support of House Bill 2982. I've been teaching for 10 years. I teach science and math, and I have been a proficiency practitioner for the last 9 years. When I first entered teaching, I saw a disconnect between the curriculum that I was supposed to get through with students and how students were taking ownership of their own learning. And very quickly was excited by this idea of proficiency. The idea of proficiency is that instead of getting through curriculum, I unveil what's happening behind the curtain, and they get to see kind of what the expectation is, and I have clear learning targets for students. When I give them a quiz or an assignment, it's to meet that goal. It's not to put points in a grade book that allows them to dig themselves into a hole they can't get out of. When we look at data in terms of where they're at, we can come up with action plans. What are we going to do differently? What do I as a practitioner need to do differently? What do you as a student need to do differently? And it changed the conversation in my classroom from what extra credit do I need to do to get an A, or how many points do I need to get a D, because the idea that D means diploma. And as a high school teacher, kids were just worried about getting credit and not really worried about acquiring skills that are going to build upon each other to be more successful. When we started this back in 2006 at Scappoose High School, our science and math scores were, for Oaks assessment, 45% approximately in each subject area. This last year, they were 84 and 85% respectively. We saw continued growth in that area, and we are building upon that to make sure that students are ready for smarter balance assessment, because for us, it's not a big leap. When we think about the new standards of Common Core or Next Generation, we feel like we're already envisioning where we want to take our kids. We don't want them to regurgitate knowledge. We want them to be problem solvers. And so when we think about
the new standards, when we think about teacher evaluations tied to student performance, when we think about the 40-40-20 plan, we're not intimidated because in proficiency, we're really looking at our standards through a lens of what are the skills that we have to have all of our students be prepared for, every single one of them. What do we do when our kids do not have those skills? We have built-in interventions into our curriculum. We don't look at a kid and say, sorry, I guess you're going to have to try it next year. Maybe you'll have better luck. We have a plan for every single student. I think that it's kind of awesome that I sit there and I'm being productive and being successful in my own classroom, and I kind of get in a rut still, and the ability to work with the BEC and share my knowledge as a proficiency coach with all of these other teachers is fantastic, because every time we have a new policy or something change in education, we're usually sitting with a group of a bunch of professionals, and someone's reading off, this is the new requirement, and we're not sure how to implement it. And the ability to go and sit with teachers, and especially in my own subject matter, we all know kind of the obstacles we're facing, and be able to ask questions, give them real answers, even if they're not the answers they're looking for, it's sometimes not pretty, and to sit there and problem solve with each other and come up with exemplars and examples of where they should be heading, and own that this is where I'm at, this is where I need to go, it's a kind of a fabulous thing, because we don't learn from books, really. We don't learn from videos. Our kids don't learn that way. So how can we learn that way? And so it's been kind of a nice and kind of very impactful year for me, because I noticed that I have a website, and I might have like 3 people visit my proficiency website maybe a month. And when I go to one of these trainings, I might see 10 teachers, and the first day I'll have 10 people that come to that website, and then the next day it's 20, and the next day it's 100, then the next day it's 180. So when I go and visit teachers, I'm not just impacting those 10 teachers. I'm impacting every teacher and every educator that they're interacting with. So I just strongly encourage you to support the work of the BEC and their efforts to bring in proficiency to scale in Oregon.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Ruth?
Just quick comment. No real questions, but I just wanted to recognize Tamara Bush Johnson. I've actually known her for over 30 years, and a great example of how you can work for education kind of outside the traditional education community, be working, bringing together education and business in this wonderful way. And so, thank you, and maybe you'll get a gold star someday.
Well, Tamara's been around because I've probably known her for 30 years.
I've been around.
Anyway, Representative McLean, then Representative Hack.
Well, first of all, I mean, everything that you're saying sounds like a process that a lot of us go through in our own, you know, in our own teaching. You know, that's what you do as you readjust and you rethink about your classroom and what's going on. And proficiency is something that's another way of assessment, right? And so there's a lot of things, whether it be performance or anything else. But this money, this $700,000, you're asking that it come out of the general fund population. Or it's general fund. It's not coming out of the school fund. It's coming out of just the general fund. And so it's not being taken away from schools. It's an additional. Okay, and then secondly, the $700,000 is going to be the money that will allow you to do the 4 sites that you started last year.
Yes, it would be that, and the potential, since it would probably be for 2 years, we're hoping that we would have 2 full school years. So it would be the continuation of those 4 sites and then a potential additional site or two. You know, and we have not been asked to put together a budget. I don't know if it would be under a contract or another grant application. So, but the money would then go for more professional development for the teachers within those schools, and to perhaps add additional teachers, because not all the teachers in all the sites are involved.
Right. And then the final question is, are you taking these schools from the list of 32 schools that need the most help in the school systems or districts in the state of Oregon? How do you choose your schools?
Yes, they were from the low achievement schools in math and reading, mm-hmm. and they had to be diverse. This is according to the ODE grant guidelines. ODE set that, and they had to be geographically located in a variety of parts. They had to be K-12, which we have, elementary, middle, high school. So there were lots of guidelines that we had to choose.
But so your program basically started with the grant program.
No, we've been doing this work for 10 years, working with...
I mean, when we started the combination of public and private funds?
That's correct. We did. Okay. And that was started this first time this past year. We were thrilled.
Thank you. Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thank you for being here, and I love that we're teaching to proficiency, and I think we should be doing that always. My concern would be that we stay away from proficiency-based grading. So I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, okay.
And then my other question would be, in teaching to proficiency, do you see any issues with some students moving quicker than others? And if you have issues with that, how do you address it?
So when you talk about stay away from proficiency-based grading, are you thinking like highly proficient, proficient in lieu of an A, B, or C?
Correct.
Well, I think there's a lot of hybrids out there. At Scappoose High School, we designate the difference between highly proficient and proficient based on what a student can do with the standard, but we still award A, B, C, D grades because there isn't that. For us, we don't see the translation between what highly proficient means to what a College Board would accept. And so we haven't made that leap. So we're fine with keeping the ABC scale. What was your other question?
So in just a follow-up on just that part, too. When you are teaching to proficiency, which, again, I think that's wonderful, but if you go to the grading to proficiency, if a student can't be proficient, say, until the end of your semester, mm-hmm. and you have midway semester grades, there's no way for a student to achieve an A because they can't be proficient, is my concern with the whole proficiency.
In my school, that is not the case. And in fact, you might have a student that goes all the way through the first semester, still can't demonstrate proficiency, but by the end of the school year, we'll go back and retranscript those grades.
Okay.
And so I think that's a difference in how people are interpreting that, and that would be something that I would never encourage someone to say that at this point, this is your testimony, or this is where you're at in proficiency, because it would be analogous to points where you dig yourself in a hole. I have a student right now that got transcripted a B in algebra who wants an A and is going to have to tackle the story problems and be able to keep working.
We just had that happen at a school, my daughter, and they were confused on, they were trying to use the proficiency-based grading and said, well, they can't be proficient, so no one in the class is going to get an A, and everybody got C's, and we had A students, and they're all trying to get into colleges, and so it was this big mess. So that was just my question.
No, and I think that's a lack of education on their part. The least restrictive. The idea is that even if a kid gets 72% on an assessment and they say, I can do better, you should allow them to do better until the kid says, I'm done. But anytime you create a structure that paints someone in the wall that says, it has to be this or this, that's, to me, against the philosophy of proficiency.
And then my last question, which you asked me what it was what do you do when you have students that move quicker than other students? So how does a teacher manage a classroom when you've got some students that are proficient quickly and are moving on and you've got other students that continue to struggle?
I think that it goes into planning in terms of what are the pathways that each student can take and being able to have some type of pre-assessment or diagnostic way to measure where a student is. We're talking about that right now at Scappoose because we want to create two different pathways for 3 years in science so that kids can meet next generation standards. But we want to be able to allow students to leapfrog. So we're coming up with a system where they can test out of the class, giving them the resources, giving them the standards, and if they test out, awarding them credit by proficiency, and then allowing them to go to the next class.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2982 and opening up a work session on House Bill 3045. Richard, if you could read it.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3045 removes the requirement that school districts transfer monies to other school districts for students who attend public charter school in the school district and reside in another school district. Declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2015. And the committee heard this bill last on March 18th.
Yes, and we have David Williams here from Portland Public. If you have any questions on the bill.
Thank you. I just want to confirm that this is the bill that talks about the 2.5% relatively small checks that go back to certain districts, and most of those checks are pretty small.
Right.
Yes, Chair Doherty, members of the committee, David Williams with Portland Public Schools. 2.5%, 10%, et cetera. This is the if I have a child who is attending a charter school in Portland Public Schools but is not resident of Portland Public Schools, statute requires me to send half of the amount the district retains. So not any of the amount that we pass through the charter. It's the half of the amount that the district retains to the resident school district, or vice versa. If one of my kids is at, say, a charter school in another district, they send me half. It's more of an administrative burden sending this money back and forth, and it is of fairly de minimis value. We know of no district that has a major objection because there aren't large sums. I think the largest sort of beneficiaries would be those districts that house large, probably the large online charter schools would get a slight benefit from this because they'd be retaining that half, but there is not necessarily a concentration of kids where a district will be hurt by the reduction. Portland Public Schools has about 300 or 400 kids attending these large online charter schools outside of the school district, and for us it's about $50,000, and we're a $500 million annual operating budget, so it's fairly de minimis value to the district and mostly an administrative hassle.
Any other questions? Okay, Representative Frederick.
Yes, Chair Daugherty, I move HB 3045 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves House Bill 3045 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative
Bretto.
Aye.
Representative
Hatton.
Aye.
Representative
Plain.
Aye.
Representative
Peluso.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative
Wilson. Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Vice Chair Gordy.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes. Do we have a carrier who would like to carry this bill?
Carry it.
Representative Springer, thank you very much. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 3045. And before we adjourn, I think most of you maybe have heard that Rob Saxton is leaving the Department of Ed and going to work for the Northwest Regional ESD in Hillsboro. And just kind of for the record, I've worked with Rob since about 2004, and he is one of those superintendents, one of those gentlemen that whose heart is truly with the kids in the classroom. And I think you saw with him talking with such passion about the 3-3 initiative that we have. So he will be missed, but I know that he will be a little closer to home in the ESD. He is retiring in June and will be working part-time at the Northwest Regional.
Okay. I just hope we can do something here for him. He deserves some acknowledgement.
Well, actually, I'm not going to bug him, so that might be, you know,
there's
what
a
it was. I was the union rep, and he was the superintendent, so I promise I wouldn't bug him much. So anyway, so with that, anything else?
Yes, I just wanted to echo what you had to say. He is really an extraordinary superintendent. Mm-hmm. and is clearly committed to the kids, has shown that time after time.
Oh, yeah.
And he's been in a difficult position. Let's put it that way. So that's been a struggle. But I will say Northwest Regional ESD is getting quite a boost by mm-hmm. having him in that direction.
Okay. With that, I adjourn the House Committee on Education. See you guys Friday.
Probably 67.
Friday.
Probably 67.